Welcome. This is Crystal Leedy, and I'm sitting here today with Novella Carpenter, who is author of Farm City, The Urban Farmer. Novella, welcome to Portland.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And I know you've lived here briefly, and now you're a native of, but you're in Seattle?
Yeah. I'm from Seattle. Originally, I was born in Idaho and then moved to the Northwest. Moved to rural Washington, and then went to school in Seattle, lived there for about 10 years, and then moved to Oakland.
And after having a rich beginning in such farm states as Idaho and Washington and even Oregon, you discovered this in what city?
It was Oakland, California.
In Oakland, California. Mm-hmm. 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 Well, that's got to be an interesting journey. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you came to be there, a little bit about your history, and then we can talk about your book.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, my parents were back to the land hippies, and so they actually lived in Berkeley and had attended school there, went to college at UC Berkeley, and were part of the whole protest hippie movement.
Yeah, so you get good roots.
Yeah. And my mom's originally from Southern California, and my father is from outside of Portland. So then they were part of the back to the land movement. So in the 70s, early 70s, they moved to a ranch in Idaho. And tried to live off the land and had a good go at it for about 6 years and then kind of abandoned that dream. And so I definitely was influenced by this landscape and the bounty of the Northwest. It's living in California now. It's amazingly lush. It is so nice and wet and verdant. And
right now, you mean because of all the rain we've been getting?
Yeah. I mean, even, but just compared to the dryness of California. And then I lived in Shelton, Washington, which is a little logging town in the Olympic Peninsula.
Yes.
And I did live in Portland for a month. But, you know, that's one of the things you do is, living in the Northwest, you try all the different cities on, go live in Seattle, and then you go to Portland. And I actually did find it in Oakland, which may seem odd, but California has an amazing growing season, which is basically all year round. And the sun is just gorgeously hot down there. And so I'm able to grow stuff that I could never grow in the Northwest, like lemon trees and avocados, just that kind of stuff, it's nice. It's wonderful.
So your crops would probably be different than our local urban farmers. I can't call myself an urban farmer, but we're growing as much as we can over on our little piece in Vancouver, Washington. And there are two chickens. So
nice.
We can grow tomatoes and a few other things.
But that's great.
But let's hear a little bit about the richness of what you're doing right now, of what you're able to grow in the garden where you're located.
Well, one of the reasons why I'm able to even grow as much stuff as I can is because, the problem with California is that most of the land has been taken over with development. There's so dang many people.
Yeah.
But in certain areas, you'll find certain pockets of Oakland, California, for instance, that they're under rough sort of economic circumstances. And so they have many abandoned areas. It's sort of like Detroit in California, in parts of Oakland. And so when I moved down there, my boyfriend and I rented an apartment specifically that was adjacent to an abandoned lot. Mm-hmm. And pretty big lot, like a 4,500 square foot lot. And so then we were just like, cool, this is our opportunity to grow all this food,
And there was no one to bother you doing that?
No, I mean, not very much. Eventually, the person who owned the lot showed up. But, most people recognize that a garden is better than a trash heap. So, everyone is sort of there's a speculation, wild speculation. And so, especially a couple of years ago in California. And so what you would get are these people buying lots or buying houses and, in the hopes that one day they're going to turn it around and make tons of money. And so this lot was in a similar situation. He was just sitting on it until he could sell it for half a mil or whatever.
Oh, and you rescued it. Oh.
So in the meantime, I took it over and I continue to be blessed by this recession. And so nobody is going to develop that lot for probably several more years. So I have a big garden, big vegetable garden. But I think another interesting thing is the part that makes it more urban farming is that there are animals on the farm. So I have chickens and rabbits and goats and at one point, I raised two pigs.
Tell us a little bit about that, both the upside and the down, because I think a lot of our listeners would like to know about raising animals in the city. We're speaking with Novella Carpenter, and she's written Farm City, The Urban Farmer. So what about the animals in Oakland?
Yeah, the animals of Oakland. Well, it's funny because I have a blog, and I get a lot of comments from people who actually live in Portland, and they say things like, Novella, I want to raise a pig in Portland. And I have a big advice for them, which is that pigs, my concept with the pigs was that I live in a city and there's tons of garbage, you know, like sort of like restaurants and grocery stores that throw out all this food.
Free food.
Free food. And I could feed it to these pigs and then I would be able to eat the pigs, which worked out. But on paper, you don't smell that. And so like the pigs were very fragrant, to say the least. And they sometimes escaped because they're pretty smart. And so when you've got like a 200-pound pig traipsing down your street, it's kind of a horrifying moment.
I could imagine. In fact, I talked recently to someone who had been chased by a pig and it was no fun. But how did your pig get out? I mean, I've heard they're smart too.
They're smart. They just figured out they had to go through three gates basically, and they just figured out that they could, you know, push the gate open with their snout. And they're incredibly destructive. So there was just major pandemonium going on. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so those are the warnings that I give people who like say, hey, I want to have a pig, because it should not be approached with casual dalliance. It
no.
is like, you know, a lot of work as well.
Perhaps that we shouldn't eat other beings that are almost as smart as we are. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because I have these Vietnamese monks that live across the street from me, and they're vegetarian and Buddhist. And so when they actually helped me catch the pigs when they escaped. And there was a moment when one of the monks said to me, they want to be free. And I'm like, I know. So it's true. But, you know, at the same time, I was just the cab ride over. I was talking to the guy who was driving the cab, and he said, oh, yeah, he's from Somalia. And we were talking about food. And I mean, people in Somalia, that's, you know, they're herding people. And that's what they do. They eat meat. So I think that there's some sense of like people are always like, oh, you shouldn't eat meat because animals are so smart. But I don't really buy into that. I think animals and humans have a sort of a symbiotic relationship. So,
just as an aside, I as a chicken keeper worry about the day that I might have to make mm-hmm. a decision about mm-hmm. what to do to our lovely chickens. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big problem. I have a lot of people that come to me and they have a pet chicken, but it's sick or there's something horribly wrong with it. Apparently, you can't take them to the vet to have them kill them for some reason. Anyway, it's a problem. So it's kind of like if you have chickens, you might want to know how to take care of them in a humane and loving way.
Yes, exactly. Well, we've been talking about different things here. One of the questions I wanted to know is, what are some of the biggest challenges? And I guess having talked about the pigs, we should say, what are some other of the challenges that you face in maintaining an urban farm?
Mm. Well, I mean, a big part of what I do is, you know, constantly feeding the animals. Like I'm on in order to go on this tour, I had to set up a major system to keep everything kind of running. So I guess I don't consider it a problem. It's just something that is probably more work than most people would want to do. For instance, if you kill house plants, you probably shouldn't try urban farming because it does require some attention and care.
So people who love to work with plants and have some experience with them would be the ones to try this.
Right, right. Because your plants are your babies too.
Yeah.
And so you're constantly watching them, making sure they have water and they have enough room and all these things. And so animals are very similar in that way. So in terms of time spent, it can be a little much. The other thing is like many times there's just sort of a stigma against keeping animals in a city environment. It's not widely accepted, except in places where there is a pretty strong immigrant culture, because there tends to be, like my neighborhood is predominantly Vietnamese. There's lots of people from Yemen. And I actually had a guy come over the other day, and I have Nigerian dwarf goats, and he's from Nigeria. And he walked back, he's like, it's just like Nigeria here. Everybody keeps, even in the city, keeps some goats in the backyard because it's their meat. It's their milk. They're milk goats. And so I thought that was really interesting. I don't think what I'm doing would go over well in, say, a Tony neighborhood of San Francisco.
Mm.
In fact, I have a friend who attempted to keep goats there. They escaped. someone called the police. I mean, they were like worried about like disease vectors and, you know, so city people are so distant from their food that sometimes it's hard to explain to them, you know, why you're doing this, which is a big reason why I want to do it is because I want to feel close to my food, but it can be an alien kind of thing.
Well, and you do get the opportunity to speak to people who would question, say, the goats.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm hoping I'm going to make it like socially reasonable to do some of these things. And, it's also interesting looking back historically that many people kept animals. There were sheep grazing in the White House lawn.
Oh, yeah.
Michelle, are you listening? That's all I'm saying is that there's definitely opportunities, and it's not just – it's not having animals in the city is actually a product of our time, you know, just like when people used to keep animals in the city. And so we've kind of gotten into this whole Manichaean thinking, like, you know, city – and then the country. The country's somewhere out in this beautiful pastoral place. But actually, my argument is that actually you can have the country in the city.
And it seems to me, it may just be the people I know, but that the culture is moving toward and supporting that idea.
Yeah.
Of less things being kept away from us, like farms, mm-hmm. And more variety and opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's three reasons for that. One is the recession is really affecting people. Mm-hmm. I mean, seed sales are up by 50% or something. So people are really economically driven to grow at least some of their own food. And there's a sort of sense of fear of what if things get even worse. And I think another thing is that I think people are just feeling a little bit like too much in front of the laptop maybe, or like the cell phone. And so it's really nice to just like be out in the garden and you just feel kind of freed from technology.
You know, I can say that for sure. I can get caught up very easily on the computer. And right outside my door is calling these plants.
It's true. It's true. I think the third reason why people are into it is because of slow food and the sort of like food movement, you know, kind of championed by Alice Waters and Michael Pollan. Although I think that urban farming is kind of like the next generation of that. It's like the younger kids who we want to eat good food, but we don't want to be elitists. And so it's really a nice way to, you know, grow your like fancy mixed greens, but not pay a bunch of money for it and make it into this like really precious kind of thing. It's just something you do.
Yes. Well, I say thank you, Michael Pollan, but how, if in any ways, has his books and philosophy affected you?
Yeah, well, I studied with him for 2 years at the journalism school, and he's actually a pretty good friend of mine, so I'm lucky to have that relationship, and he's a great guy. He's so cool. He actually just came over to my farm and checked out the goats and had all these great questions, and he's just a great person, and his books are really important. I actually was working for him when Omnivore's Dilemma came out.
Oh, you were?
Mm-hmm. So I actually watched him rocket from – I had always been a fan of Botany of Desire. Such a great book about plants.
I loved it. I never knew that the Dutch people went crazy about tulip bulbs,
yeah,
for example,
right,
in the 1700s.
Right, right. And the marijuana chapter is really funny.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
yes.
Props to him. And then, you know, I had read his article about raising a steer, not in his backyard, but sort of commissioning one from a feedlot. And I was really affected by it. I was living in Seattle at the time, and I had chickens and bees. And so I was sort of on the path of urban farming. And it really made me question what I was doing with my food. And where did that Thanksgiving turkey come from? And those kind of questions. So he's been just amazing about thinking about those issues.
Mm-hmm. I did want to ask about beekeeping, too. How has that been for you? I have a neighbor, but we are more of suburban than urban. And he does well, and my plants benefit from it and
that's
such.
That's great.
But how about in...
That's a great relationship. That's really wonderful. Does he ever do extractions? Do you ever get honey or anything out of the deal?
Oh, well, we trade. We have eggs, and he has bees, and it works
so
out well.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. The bees are great. I think the bees are the one animal that I'm going to have forever because it's kind of something you can do even when you're old. A lot of some of the stuff is really like keeping the goats is really like physically demanding, just, you know, like I got to move bales of alfalfa hay around and stuff.
Oh, yeah, a lot of
work. But the bees are so sweet. And, you know, really, you're offering them a home. They're living there. They're pollinating your crops. Every once in a while, you have to harvest honey to in order to keep them from swarming. And it's really just the most beautiful relationship. And they're just... they're just the hardest workers, you know. It's just amazing to watch them every day just light out and go into the world. And they actually do really well in cities because, you know, people in cities often like to grow, you know, flowering plants. And so,
well, yes.
You know, everyone wants something flowering in their gardens. And so the bees can really take advantage of that.
And I think we need to cherish our bees. Your bees and my neighbor's bees are not part of that... the terrible situation that bees are in whose hives are collapsing because of probably overwork.
I know. I feel sorry for the bees that are on the pallets and shipped all over the place in these semi-trucks.
Yeah.
My bees have a pretty nice setup.
Yeah.
You know, they're not moved around. That really makes them angry when you have to move them. So.
Oh, I bet. Mm. They're settled bees.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is Krista Leedy, and I'm talking with Novella Carpenter, who is... not only an urban farmer, but author of Farm City. And there's a subtitle, The Education of an Urban Farmer. I wanted to say something about the goats, too. I went to school with a friend who has goats, and she lives even further out than I do. But she talks about they are so lovable that you develop this mental problem she calls goat fever. And you just... need more and more goats and more contact. Has that happened to you, or is this just her problem?
No, I'm totally guilty of that, too. Oh. I have 6 goats. Yeah. What happens is, I don't know. I was trying to describe it to a friend. I find that goats are better than diamonds. You know, they're just like the most awesome creature, like with their weird eyes, and they're very calming. And so what happens is you come home from work and you had a crappy day, and the goats are just there, and they're like kicking it, they're lounging and eating some hay, and it's just so peaceful. And so then you just feel like, oh, I can just sit here too, and it's really wonderful. And they're very you know, they like to hang out together, like mom and baby, like to just like curl up. They're kind of like cats in a way. And they'll come, the babies will come and curl up in my lap too and just go to sleep. It's ridiculous how cute they are. And so goats, yeah, goat fever. I hadn't heard of that disease, but I think I might have it.
Sounds like it could be catching.
Well, the other thing is the goats make wonderful manure because, you know, they're vegetarians. And so they have this great, it's a pellety kind of manure that is wonderful in the garden. I even have a friend that comes and I have this back stair area where the goats like climb up and down the stairs all day. It's really great territory for them. But what happens is they poop on the stairs, and then my friend comes over with a broom and, like, sweeps it up and puts it in her garden. It's so awesome.
Ooh, it does take a village. Well, you're making it sound so attractive. I got to say, I wish I had more space to garden in. Let's talk about any downsides you can think of so that our listeners will know that it's not as wonderful as I'm thinking it is.
Yeah. Well, there are downsides. I mean, one of the things is I raised turkeys one season, and turkeys are incredibly, what is the word I want to use? Turkeys are very curious.
Oh, and I've heard them called stupid, and that's not true.
No, and especially the stupid ones may be the sort of standard whites that are raised for all the Thanksgiving tables. But the heirloom turkeys are pretty smart, and wild turkeys are really smart. And they're very curious, and they like adventures. And so one time I did have a turkey fly over because she was curious what was on the other side of this fence. Well, what was on the other side of the fence was 2 junkyard dogs. So it was bad. It was really bad.
Oh.
So that kind of curiosity in a city environment is probably not good. Although, I mean, I must say that in the country, it probably wouldn't be good either. Like, let's say she just flew into a tree or something and then, got abandoned and then coyotes ate her. So
right. Well, did the junkyard dogs get her then?
Yeah.
And of course, there are coyotes out in wilder places.
Sure, sure. So it's part of that. I mean, I guess like farming has... urban farming has the same downsides as regular farming, which is that many of your animals may get sick or get hurt. It's expensive, you know. I had to go get my goat's horns disputted, and it was just, you know, it costs like $150, you know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So there's constantly something that needs fixing, or, and I'm a total scrounger, you know, I try to buy as little inputs as possible,
mm-hmm.
but I do end up having, you know, alfalfa costs in California, even local alfalfa is $18 a bale. And the goats eat 2 bales a month.
Oh,
so, you know,
yes.
It's like food costs. It's like having children, basically. But it's the same thing as like having children, that there's joys and then there's the, you know, lows.
I can imagine that's true.
Other downsides, like if I was going to give like be a cautionary tale, I guess the other thing is bees swarm, which can freak out your neighbors, or you can just sort of like not be able to explain why your turkey's gobbling every minute, you know, underneath their window, that kind of stuff.
Neighbors might complain.
Mm-hmm. Noises, smells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you really have to make sure that the neighbors are on board and that they're interested in doing your project with you a little bit, which is great because then it builds community. You know, you end up talking to people, or, you know, like my neighbors at one point asked me about the pigs. They were just like, oh, my God, they smell so bad. And it was the last 2 days of the pig's life on the farm. And mm-hmm. so I was like, oh, yeah, I'm really sorry. Thank you for saying something. And then I went and bought them roses. You know, it's like you have to do something to kind of make up for this. And it's good to not ever be like, I'm right. You know, who wants to be right all the time? I admit to my mistakes, and it's kind of a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's good to be able to see what you need to work on and what not. And to learn the economic realities, you know, having only 2 chickens and not a whole lot to do, I never really thought about how much it would cost to feed different animals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you really do a cost analysis, if you really think about and break down sort of like how much, well, where did your chicken food come from? And then so you start to wonder about all these other things. So then I've started trying to just feed them mostly scraps and rice and just barely any pelleted food, because it's soybean and corn that come from elsewhere.
I got to check. We've got a guy just down the street that has a feed store. I'm going to have to check about where ours come from.
Definitely ask. And you can shop around and find really local sources, or you can do other assorted things to make it not like that.
I'm just looking at the other things we'd like to know about here. I've got an article that someone wrote about you, and he talks about your experiment in downward mobility beginning to unravel. That seems a little harsh from what you said, from what you've told us. Would you want to answer that in any way? Or?
I don't know. I didn't really kind of skim that review. It's a Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle review. I don't know. Downward mobility. Yeah, I actually wrote an article for the Chronicle, not in response to his criticisms, but just to sort of give you an idea that, I've been downwardly mobile for my entire life. I am a poor person. I am proudly poor. I'm not slumming. I'm not like moving to the ghetto so I can like have a ride on the ghetto train. I am poor. I'm working poor. And I was really angry about that thing, because it's like trying to say that I'm some kind of elitist person, which I totally am not. So I invite him to come over and admire my house and see that I am actually living the way that I say I'm living. I think there was just some, I think there were possibly some, he was jealous of me or in some way. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why, but you know, I'm not sure if you saw, I had a really great review in the New York Times. So, you know, I kind of don't really care what the San Francisco Chronicle says.
Right. And I mean, San Francisco is a pretty elitist place too. I mean, There's that aspect of it.
Yeah.
I'm probably 40 years older than you are, maybe 30. And when I was a young woman, and my interest has also, I mean, I got a college education, so we can't say that, you know, I didn't have to earn some money to pay that back. So I was familiar with a book called Living Poor in Style, and I thought that was really great.
Isn't that by the same author of Ecotopia?
I wonder if it is.
I actually met him.
You did.
And he told me about that book, and I was so surprised. I've never read that book. I think that people are really, especially in America, that you're supposed to be embarrassed that you're poor. And for me, I'm sort of like, I'm not embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the problem of America is that people are always trying to get rich. So they're destroying the environment, or, you know, they're
destroying the economy,
destroying people, yeah, or enslaving people. And, you know, so I don't, to me, it's like, seems like the only rational option is to be poor. Well, and I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, what if you make a lot of money off your book or whatever? It's like, you know, that just means I can buy land and continue to farm in the city and expose children who are poor to farm life, you know? So it's not like I have dreams of like living in a mansion in Napa or something, you know? It's just who I am. So
right.
I think there's that. And I mean, you're right. And part of what he alluded to in the article was that I had gone to journalism school. I paid to go to graduate school. Well, I paid that through loans and scholarships. So it's not like some fat cat was like supporting me. I was raised by a single mom, you know, it's not like, and so anyway, I just feel like a lot of times people, and especially it's a reaction to the food thing. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, she likes good food. She must be rich, you know? And that's what we're trying to get away from. And I think maybe that's why it disturbs me so much, because there really is a way to eat really well and healthfully by doing it yourself in the city, especially because most people, you can't live out in the country and not have money. And so I feel like it really empowers people. And so, and I invite other people to learn how to garden. And once, you know, you can teach your neighbors, and then your neighbors can teach other people. And so it's kind of like spreading. So I think it's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing, too. And I'm so glad we've had you here today. We've been speaking with Novella Carpenter, whose book has just come out, Farm City, The Urban Farmer. Novella, you're going to be reading later on today at Powell's. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm reading tonight, Tuesday, at 7:30 at the downtown Powell's.
Great. So our listeners can catch you there, too. And I think you'll find a lot of people receptive to what you have to say here in Portland. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun.
Great.